All right, I'm John Richards here in Seattle, and I have the Lumineers scattered around New York City, I do believe, right? You guys are hoteling it and B&B-ing it right now?
Yeah, for our release week, we're all scattered about the city.
It's a weird process for y'all, because you're now, I assume, wrote a lot of the record during the pandemic, recorded, rehearsed, now release. Now tour, you probably thought at some point of this process you would not be in the thick of the pandemic. How is it right now, just this particular part, trying to, you know, promote a record during a global pandemic?
It's a really good question. How does it feel for you? It's not as intimate, I think. I remember coming in for our second album. We got to walk through, you know, each song by song in person. And it was really special and really cool. I think a lot of those moments are depending on where the pandemic was at, taken away. You know, a lot of shows are canceled or postponed. It's funny, there's a song on this album, Where We Are, that when our management heard it, they were like, well, we have to put this out like right now. Cause they thought when they heard it, it was about to be over. And now they're like, this song still makes complete sense. And I'm like, unfortunately, yes, it does. So it feels like a bit of hurry up and wait and be very patient, because things change on a dime, sometimes for good and sometimes not. But I think it forces you to be really like, okay, don't get too far ahead of yourselves. Just hope for the best in the next day or two, and we won't look much beyond that. And that's what we try to do.
It's a perfect setup, because I know you perform this live for our sessions today. And before we show that, can you tell me where this was filmed, and also who was involved in filming? It's just beautiful. It's just you two. Where are you at for this recording?
I think we're on a soundstage in Denver, if I remember. And our friend Nick Bell helped set it up and orchestrate a lot of it. He's also directed music videos for us now, and a guy who's been with us kind of since day one. I went to high school with him, and I think it's like a sparse representation of what, you know, like, well, the album is kind of sparse but also really rich, and we feel like there's a lot of interesting things going on, and we hope that that's visually what's going on as well. We were trying to do that because we love KXP. We like to remind people it's the first station that ever played us, so we'd like to always say thanks for that forever. We're forever indebted to you, so thank you.
That's the perfect setup for that song.
I could see it in the air. Every word was like smoke from a cigarette. You were blowing in your hands. The heater broke in the Oldsmobile, and the light in your eyes. Alone on the freeway. I was stranded in the bed. You were listening to the dark side of the moon. I could barely see your eyes. Psilocybin in a hotel room, and the light in your eyes. And waves on the ceiling. I'll be your bright side, baby, tonight. I'll be your bright side, baby, tonight. Night. You were tired of Tacoma. I was tired of believing we were right. Losing every other friend. Finding nothing in the afterlife but the light in your eyes. Alone on a feeling. I'll be baby tonight. I'll be your stranded on a bridge, crying for your kids. I'll be your bright side, baby, tonight, tonight, tonight. See it in the air. Every word was like smoke from a cigarette. Sun is coming up ahead. Catch a crack in the windshield, shining the light in your eyes. Alone on the freeway. I'll be your bright side. Stranded on a bridge, the cops are closing in. I'll be a bright side, baby, tonight, tonight, tonight. Standing on a corner, I could listen to the radio. When the Savior sang from the fire escape on the second floor. You were always saying we would make it to the catacombs. In the end it came when you wrote my name on the bathroom stall. If the photograph doesn't bring you back, if the final chapter is it ever after. I remember waking up the neighbor like a stadium. Yeah, he ran upstairs screaming no one cared, and the band played on. Even in the limo you were feeling like an animal. At the traffic light where you blew your mind on a mobile phone. And day and night, my love, you said the blood was on my hands. Said to me, my love would never die. Long as you ride, I couldn't give you up. Forever run, I couldn't. Long as you're where we are. I don't know where we are, but it will be okay. Where we are, I don't know where we are, but it will be okay. Laying on the table like I wasn't even there, holding on the steering wheel and coming up for air. What was I? Driving in the rain. What was I? Calling out your name. Staring at the ceiling fan and feeling far away. Leaning on the reasons like it wasn't even fair. What was I? Driving in the rain. What was I? Calling out your name. Where we are, I don't know where we are, but it will be okay. Where we are, I don't know where we are, but it will be okay. Crashed the car in Arizona on the interstate. People pulling over, crying, thinking we were dead. What was I? Driving in the rain. What was I? Calling out your name. I know who you wanted me to be. Always holding up your tragedy. Where we are, I don't know where we are, but it will be okay. Where we are, I don't know where we are, but it will be okay. Where we are, I don't know where we are, but it will be okay. Where we are.
You mentioned earlier the AirPlay. It we've mentioned it before, but I think as technology changes too, the story kind of gets funnier because it was a CD demo. You know, now people are like, whoa, they sent in the mail? Yeah, exactly. And it was me being fed up with piles of music and just wishing one day maybe we'd have a different way to get music to people. And it just happened to be sitting on the top of the pile like, this is it. If this is no good, I'm throwing this all away. If this is good, I'm going to play the hell out of it. And then it was your record and it was very, very good. And I was thinking about that session too when you came up. You know, there is something, that's why I like this session that you guys are doing with us. You know, I wish I could be there, of course, always. You know, seeing a band live and having a conversation live is always better. But I really like the stripped down nature of it. And the piano in it, Jeremiah, is just gorgeous. And I love your record. I wanted to mention it too. It was a brilliant record and perfect for me, perfect for the pandemic. And just, did that influence you in this? I know you play piano, but like putting that record together, that influence how you play with your band, or
I think it has to, right? In some, maybe not in a specific linear way, but I think it has to inform, one informs the other. I think that it's funny that when Wes and I started making music, I could barely play like Tom Petty, like A major chord to save my life. And I still to this day watch my hands very diligently and probably look a little bit nervous still playing the piano. But yeah, making this solo album, which was all like piano instrumental stuff, I think it's just like songwriting and working on music feels a little bit like a muscle at times. And I think I was able to sort of exercise through the pandemic mentally and sort of also spiritually. And Wes and I started, I think, working on Brightside in the summer, June, July, something like that, summer of 2020. You know, we knew that the tour had been canceled for sure, indefinitely, whatever we were doing with our last album, Three. So I think it kept me sharp and it kept me inspired. I don't think if I had done that, I still would have made, I think I still would have brought ideas to the table that would have been cool, but you never know. I think it just kept me sharp and it was fun to continue to make music. And when I met up with Wes at our sort of like respective houses in Denver, when I was still living there, it just felt really natural to start sort of like write together again and sort of emotionally exercise all these demons that COVID had sort of started to, you know, wear on us slowly but surely. So, yeah.
How was the impact on your guys' relationship, your friendship, not just as bandmates, but in this pandemic? Seeing each other, I don't know how long you went without seeing one another. I went a year and a half sometimes seeing some of my best friends, and seeing them both reminded me, hey, man, we don't even miss a beat here. We're clearly friends. And then the other was just like, dude, I missed you.
I think for me personally, I was going to say, like, when Wes and I first started to work on writing this album, rapid tests were nowhere near as available as they were now. Like, we've gotten tested 3 times in the last 24 hours. And when we were starting in Denver, it was like you book this appointment and they were just much harder and much more just stranger to find at the time. So once we got tested and were able to actually be in the same room with each other, I think it just sort of reminded, you know, myself and reinforced the value of like the friendship and the musical bond and being able to be in a room with somebody that you care about and be able to work on music again. And it just sort of brought all that back. I think when, you know, it's the classic adage, once you have something taken away, you only realize you appreciate it even that much more, 9 times out of 10 at least. And, you know, this time was tenfold. It was like the idea that you couldn't sit on a couch and I couldn't, you know, sit on a piano bench and just look at each other and converse about music. That was seemingly getting ripped away from us because of this microscopic demon called COVID. But once we were able to start to do that more and more, that really helped me feel a lot better and sort of like feed my soul throughout the pandemic, I think.
And Wes, your family has expanded during this last period of time. I'm trying to think of when I last talked to you.
Both of us, me and Jer, each had a baby girl.
I was going to say, you both did during the pandemic. To me, is such weird feature. I'm actually stopping for a second. Like, did you have a baby during it? I can't remember now.
Yeah.
And so in a way was not having to be out on the road a bit of a blessing for someone who makes their living out there on the road to be able to be there maybe a little bit more for your child than you may not have been?
Yeah, a bit. Yeah, I think I got to see my son, who's a little older. He's almost 4 now. I got to see him in some pivotal, about a 2-year period where I probably have seen a lot less of each other. But even if he's on the road, you know, there's just a lot that happens every day. So I, waking up with him and putting him to bed and all these things that I didn't normally get to do a ton of, was really special. And then our baby girl coming last year now that we're in the new year.
Was it last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's a new year. See? Time is just...
She came in March. So, that was really special as well. But it is like one of those things where I think you sort of try to just like... You probably act the way you act every time. So if you see the best in things, you probably saw the best in as much as you could. And if you didn't, like for us... It harkens back to, I remember like 2011 and we got robbed in LA and all our instruments were taken and we had a house show. You can might be able to hear my daughter screaming in the background and I'm sorry.
It's all good.
But,
right on.
Don't worry. Somebody's helping her. I'm not like just leaving her to cry.
That's the follow-up question.
Don't
worry about it.
basically, and that night we played a show with barred instruments and we kept playing. And I felt like that was the attitude was just, this is something we need to overcome. That's it. And I felt like it's just an attitude that you just like adopt and innately have, or you don't. And I feel like with this, the thing we did, I think that was smart was we didn't try to make a record. It just a record happened. We tried to make a couple songs that maybe gave us a head start on the next album. And then that blossomed into this making a whole record. But I think the low, keeping the expectations low and just almost like trying just for the sake of trying to feel alive, to feel purpose in a time of, you feel rendered just inept at like life. You know, you're like, what's my purpose? What's my power? What's my goals in this? And all of it seems blurry. And so to just narrow it down to a song or two, I think it gave the project some wings. You know, it just made it in a way that we became kids around music again, instead of it being this, because I've thought about music more clinically sometimes, where I'm like, hey, you got like, you know, you look at every band that's ever existed and they have like 3 to 5 records to make their mark. And then the musical world kind of stops paying as close of attention. It's just how it works. With rare exception, there are exceptions. But I think for us, like, it was our 4th album and it felt like we were just starting a new band. And, you know, like watching all these Beatles behind the scenes and remembering that, you know, Sgt. Pepper was in an effort to get out of their own way. I feel like in a strange way, this album, we got out of our own way a lot. And there was some inner critic that was always sitting on our shoulder, chirping in our ear, and he took a break and we were able to be really innocent and like have this wonderment about music that was not there every album, because you're just so focused and maybe trying to control a little too much or trying to edit just a little too much. And this was a lot more free. So I think comes across on the album.
Are you able to then, once it's out, apply that same feeling towards the response and not have stress around how people will feel about it? I mean, a 4th record's, you've built up a base, you have a lot of fans, people are excited about your record. I'm a fan and I absolutely adore this record. I think it's some of your best songwriting. I think Bright Side and AM Radio seem like songs that have been around forever, which is for me the mark of a great song. Is like, you can't imagine that is this a cover? Like, what, how is this? It feels like something I would hear, just on the radio, that I've heard over the years, you know, it just seems very familiar and like home to me. But do you worry, are you able to get rid of that worry about what people will think of? I mean, it sounds like you went into it like that, but now the record comes out and people are going to respond and talk about it.
I think there's like, I remember when our first album came out and I was like, I remember saying to the band, you know, let's not wear like flannel shirts. It's just too cliche, you know, and let's not all wear like these fedoras. Like, it's just like a swing band now. Like, there was elements of like, let's not set ourselves up to be pigeonholed. You know, we're trying to do something, I think, that's a little bit less about a genre and more about good songwriting, whatever that means. You know, I think we're way more interested in that than being an Americana band or whatever you get put into. But at this point, I think you hope people like it, but when you have confidence and you feel like it's good, it's almost like a chef brings out food. Some people, it just might not be for them, but you know, it's an insane dish. Like, I feel like this is our best album. Like, I can say that and not say it with some sense of like, oh, that sounds like arrogance. I don't think it is. I think it's just like looking at it and saying, I'm most excited when I hear this album. And when I play it for friends, I feel like it's another band I'm listening to in a way. It's not as, maybe that's because I didn't attach so much ego to it, but it does feel like an exciting time to put out music. And you know, there will always be people who are fanning out over it, and there's people who will like hate it. And that's just like, that is life. It would be strange if it wasn't that way, but I'll tell you, it beats the feeling of like, I'm not sure how I feel about this, but let's put this out. That's not where you want to be putting out a record. You want to feel like you're really into it and proud of it, and it gives you goosebumps.
You mentioned the Beatles. I assume you watched the documentary and seen them. What did that do for songwriters, for people who see that, how much the Beatles struggled to not just... Well, a part of it is just struggling with internal conflicts at that point of their career. But I you know, you watch them all, and Paul McCartney's over in the corner making masterpieces, like, just, you know, I'm just going to, this song that's going to live forever. And, you know, and it's like, that fried my brain. But just seeing that they struggled, and the amount of humor and amount of like dicking around they did to get to a point. What does it do for a band to see the greatest band of all time go through that process?
I mean, I think I mean, Jared and I talked about it because there's something reassuring about, it's like watching Michael Jordan miss a layup or something, you know, where right. not even a layup, just miss a shot where there's, yeah. there's human beings and they actually had to often try quite hard to coax the song out of the idea, you know, to, it was there, but they sort of had to, there's a lot to still be written and there's a lot to still be worked on. And I think just seeing their, also just seeing them fool around was also reassuring because it was like, I think they were trying to get out of their own heads as well. Like they'd sing a song and they'd have their mouths closed and trying to make each other laugh and be like, and it's so goofy, but I feel like that's what you, sometimes in the studio, it's such an unnatural environment to be, and think about what they were doing on a soundstage in front of some of them, complete strangers, just in their face with a camera and the lighting's terrible and it's probably cold and they're all just like, what are we doing? Like George doesn't want to be there.
Who can blame him, man?
Yeah, yeah. He's like, he's the only one telling the truth. But
yep.
I really think it was like reassuring in that way, but it's also really exciting to see. It's like, finally there's a documentary where it represents what it actually feels like to write an idea that, you know, is special. And also watching John's reaction to Paul's, you know, Get Back, where he's just like, all right, cool. Like, it wasn't anything like, holy shit, can you believe this? It was like,
yeah,
it was so lackluster, his reaction. And it kind of shows you, like, you have to know what you have. Sometimes the world's not going to immediately tell you what you have. You have to believe that and keep holding it up. You know, like the John Cusack in that Say Anything. Like, it just, it feels like, but watching him try to coax that idea out and it almost emerged like an alien out of his belly. Like, it was, that's how it really works when cool stuff happens. And it only happens once in a while. And to see that in the real time with one of the, you know, with the best band ever and one of the coolest songs, it was just like, I don't know, to be a fly on the wall, we got to feel that for once.
Yeah. Jared, did you have that same feeling? Did you, I mean, and I'm thinking of you, you play so many instruments. Did something jump out at you? I think Ringo right away. But I also think of like John on the piano, you know, that to me was, or Paul.
For me, I felt like I couldn't even look at an instrument for like a week after finishing it because on one hand you saw this human side of them, but on the other hand, you're like, these guys are not normal people at all. And I honestly couldn't look at an instrument and even think about writing like one note because I was just, I was so like shocked in like a profound, like in a positive way though too. I was just like, wow, like completely dumbfounded by watching that. And then I think for me, seeing Paul, I didn't know he was that good at everything. Like I knew he was an amazing bassist, knew he was an amazing singer, lyricist. I didn't know he was that good at the piano. I didn't know they were all really good at the piano. Also, like everyone's like equally proficient. Everyone's equally proficient at the guitar. They all sang. It's a truly like a super group without it being a super group. And there was just so many moments like, you know, Paul coming in with the bones to Let It Be. And I just remember that really like I think I had to pause it. I was watching it on a flight going somewhere. And I just was like, wow, like, you know, there's the history of music before a song like that. Even if you don't like the Beatles, there's people that are like, screw the Beatles. It's like hating like a beautiful piece of architecture or something. It's like it or dislike it. This is like a thing that exists mm-hmm. in the history of like music. It's beyond a good review or a bad review. It's just like certain songs they wrote are just, you know, changed so many artists after them. And watching little moments like that where he just has the bones of a song like that, it was incredible. I mean, me and Wes, we were sort of texting with each other in our separate hotel rooms in Chicago talking about it. And yeah, I totally agree with what Wes said too. Like just seeing the dynamics with the band and stuff. I'm really glad that Peter Jackson kept, because it would be like an hour and 20 minutes where like essentially nothing happens and you're like, all right, what the hell's going on? And then Paul writes Get Back on the spot or right. they're on the roof playing, right. you know, let It Be or something. And it's just like, oh, okay. This, when those like diamonds in the rough finally came through, it was incredible.
Yeah, I it's funny you said you paused there. I did too, because I felt like I was watching a moment in history in real time. Like it felt like now, I don't know how to explain it because it was so new to me. And it, and I paused and went back. So I think it's really important that we watch this again. This is, this
isn't
is
like
really
John,
important.
Isn't John like reading a paper or something?
Him and Yoko.
Like, well, Yoko is reading a paper all the time.
I'm like, what the hell? Like,
yeah. Yeah. The other guys are just kind of standing there like, oh, and he starts clapping along like, okay.
Paul
yeah,
also
sure.
doesn't even have the lyrics finished. He's like, there it sounds. Da, 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 da. Another thing I was really struck by was Ringo. Every time he started a song that he had never heard before, he played the most like generic stock beat. And then like, it would be like, huh, this is so weird. Like when they were working on Don't Let Me Down? Is that the name of the song?
Yeah.
It was like a really standard beat. And then Paul starts giving him some ideas. And then Ringo starts to like change and evolve the ideas. Yeah. And it just sort of reinforced to me like how simple like drums can like really like change a song so dramatically. And the iconic, obviously like it's really hard to come up with iconic parts on the spot, but Ringo, it was so interesting to see, like he just would play the most simple beat every song and then find his way with it. And that was something I could really relate to, where it's like, it's so hard to just pull something out of your hat for every song to do something. But Ringo is known as one of these drummers where there's these beats are so iconic and so simple and so playful. And it was cool to see that human side like materialize before your eyes on film.
Yeah. My only complaint is that I don't have a documentary now for every record they did.
Yeah.
Because now I want to see how Sgt. Pepper went down or how Revolver went down or how, because I feel sad about it. Like I have a sadness that I don't know. How did they get there? And it's like trying to figure out the meaning of the universe. You'll go a little crazy. You'll never do it. You just try to figure out how those songs, anyway, we go on forever on that. I want to talk about, this cover that y'all did for us. One of my all time favorite songs. And Wes, you did a whole album of covers as well. We mentioned Jeremiah's piano record, and Wes is a really great covers record. If you haven't heard, it's just, I love it. And what it jumped out at me too, and we've talked about this, not currently, but I've talked to you about this a little bit, is about delivery of lyrics. And what I really noticed when you covered, and I should mention, it's Just Like Heaven from The Cure, your delivery and how you deliver the words in here really make this your song. They really make me hear the lyrics. You know, I don't know how else to put it. Like the lyrics meant so much more to me when I hear a cover of it slowed down. I don't get lost in the beat and everything. And the piano in this is just gorgeous. I just want to ask about how you came up with this cover.
Yeah, it's really in this. I think it's really in the spirit of the record in a funny way, because we were just in my basement and there's a little ship's piano down there. It's like it's a little smaller than a normal size piano. It's 58 keys, something like that, and it was built for ships, so they're like really short and small, and they're uprights and. It was kind of out of tune, but enough in tune with itself that it was acceptable. And so Jer was playing around with it, and we really liked how, for lack of a better word, kind of raw or bad it sounded. It was like, oh, there's a lot of humanity in there. You can't really lay anything on top of it because it'll sound – it's a strange phenomenon. But like with a piano, you can have it sort of janky, and it'll sound fine as long as you don't add a bunch of stuff on top of it. But we just started singing – we did a couple covers that day just for fun, and that was one of them. And I don't even know if we thought that was the keeper. I think we just thought, well, we want to remember this, you know, this kind of like arrangement and this way we did it. So let's just hit record. And it was a basement recording that turned into a B-side for the album. But I love the way a lot of it is, I think, Jerry, you just showed me, you kind of reimagine the song on the piano from this really kind of pumped up, happy sounding version of it that's normal, that I would call it the normal, you know, the actual version, and then covering it. Our mantra is usually just, it shouldn't even be really recognizable from the original, or else why are you covering it? Like,
that's right.
You know, growing up, there was like a really strange cover of like Uncle Cracker doing Dobie Gray that became really popular as I was a kid. And I was like, this is the worst cover because it's just the same. It's just nothing about it that was reimagined. And so I loved Jer put a lot of sadness in some of the chord choices. And then I purposely kind of like laid back and was delivering lines in a way that was like not trying to sound like a karaoke version, but to, yeah, kind of lean into what he's really singing about or what he's really feeling in that moment when he's saying those lines that can kind of trick you into thinking it's a happier song than it is.
Yeah, your emphasis on some of the words were very different than Robert Smith's in that song. That's what I noticed.
And he's like one of the most evocative singers. And, you know, it's almost like you don't really want to touch some of this material because you just like it so much and you have so much respect. But at the same time, I just know it was like if someone covered our music, I would really enjoy it if it was reimagined. And I would probably not enjoy it if it just tried to sound like us. So I think we were trying to do it justice in our own way. But like that probably has a lot to do with the what you hear in our band, a lot of those chord choices. It's what Jer's doing behind the scenes that I think a lot of attention goes to the singer and the lyrics and stuff, but that's always propped up and held up. And, you know, it's not going to matter if the music behind it's not strong and evocative in its own way. So I think that's, again, like it kind of shows you like me and Jer's relationship in a way of like the different things we're interested in, you know, and how sometimes when they don't overlap, you get more interesting music. Cause when me and Jer met, he was making instrumental beats and I was a singer songwriter, and you kind of hear that collision in the music or even in a cover like that, where I forget which chord you're doing it to on the song, Jer, but there's something happened that's way, way, way sadder than.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting. Cause I remember the beginning, the piano that bookends the song, the beginning, the intro and outro piano actually started in something that I was really like high on, being like, oh, I want to show this to Wes for like, this is like an intro to like an original Lumineer song. And then at some point, just this vision of like the classic guitar melody, dun, 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 dun. I heard this like really slow tempo in my head, like someone clapping, like dun, 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 clap, dun, like crazy, even way slower than that. And it was like, what if we made this like kind of drugged out version of Just Like Heaven? That was the original sort of inspiration. And I checked, I'm pretty sure out of like the countless covers that are available on all streaming services, we're the only one without drums. So that was kind of a cool thing. And sort of like,
yeah, that whole song is dun, 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 right?
Which those drums are like so busy and untouchable. Like I would never try to replicate those, but yeah, it was really fun to work on the song as almost like it was an original song, and you have these great lyrics to work with. You do have these great chords to work with, and trying to almost as a piano player in this particular song, trying to tease out that sadness and getting rid of and everything else that felt that The Cure did. And you know, somewhere in between those two trains of thought. And I think it was something really cool about that take that we are going to release eventually, where the piano is pretty out of tune, but even the way Wes sang it, I don't even know if you really knew all the lyrics like you do say, like you know the original songs you write. And it was really cool to hear Wes sort of like searching in the dark, but there was something about that take that just capturing magic in our opinion or something, just that
making our label wanted to like remix it, you remember, and we were like nah.
They wanted to we could make this a summer song. Great. Let's get some drums. And I remember being like, we could throw down some crazy drums in this song, no doubt. We could do it, would be very like easy to do that, but there was something cool about like holding the line and being like, you know, this is it, because the closer we get to the original, I feel like artistically that would be the wrong move. So it's really fun to do that. Yeah.
Well, I'm just glad I know guys who hear a Cure song and say, here's how we make it sadder. Okay.
You're welcome.
I got it. I'm going to make it a little sadder. The Cure does have some happy songs though. It's not like you covered Friday I'm in Love.
Yeah.
You know, or it's true. Yeah. Or Love Cats.
What's that
or something.
Six different ways.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah. I really wanted to cover that, but we didn't really know what to do with it. But his voice alone is like insane. That's like something where when you hear it note one, you already know who it is.
you do that trick, the one that makes me scream, she said, the one that makes me laugh, she said, and threw her arms around my neck. Show me how you do it, and I promise you, I promise that I'll run away with you. I'll run away with you. Spinning on that dizzy edge, I kissed her face and kissed her head, and dreamed of all the different ways I had to make her glow. Why are you so far away? She says, why won't you ever know that I'm in love with you? That I'm in love with you. You, soft and only you, lost and lonely you. Strangers, angels, dancing in the deepest ocean, twisting in the water, you're just like a dream. You're just like a dream. Daylight licked me into shape, I must have been asleep for days, and moving lips to breathe her name, I opened up my eyes and found myself alone, alone, alone above a raging sea. I stole the only girl I loved and drowned her deep inside. Soft and lonely you, lost and lonely you, you're just like heaven. I when I was younger, I should have known better, and I can't feel no remorse, and you don't feel nothing bad, nothing bad. I got a new girlfriend, feels like he's on top, and I don't feel no remorse, and you can't see past my blindness. Oh, Ophelia, you've been on my mind, girl, since the flood. Oh, Ophelia, heaven help a fool who falls in love. I got a little paycheck, and you got big plans, and you gotta move, and I don't feel nothing at all, and you can't feel nothing small. So honey, I love you, that's all she wrote. You've been on my mind, girl, like a drug. Oh, Ophelia, heaven help a fool who falls in love. Oh, Ophelia, you've been on my mind, girl, since the flood. Oh, Ophelia, heaven help a fool who falls in love. Oh, my mind, girl, since the flood. Oh, Ophelia, heaven help a fool who falls in love.
So, so you got the record, you're doing the promo, are you getting used to, in pandemic or not, you're still doing a lot of the promo stuff that you've done, leading up to records. And, how does it feel? Do you feel good about it? You're feeling like you got energy, you're ready to get this on the road. I mean, where are you guys at right now? I know we talked about the effects of the pandemic, but you know, we're heading out of this at some point where people can see you play live again, and you may not have to test 3-4 times a day to go talk to someone. But how you guys feeling heading into this new year and this new record?
Well, we got to play a handful of shows over the last couple months at the end of last year, and you know, if that's any indication of what it's like to play live again, then. Like, you know, it's very hard to wait right now because it was, I think everybody was reminded of the importance of communing, of getting together around music and the energy that it not only gives us as the band on stage, but I think it gives the whole audience and band together. There's something that you don't get, just like, you know, we're sitting here on a virtual call, but if we're in the same room, you might see my hand move a certain way and understand we interpret things a lot more than we realize. And I think our bodies really feel the collective energy in a room when you're around a sea of bodies that are just vibing on the same song together. And I think that emotion, feeling alive, I think all of that returns when we come back to play live music. And up until that point, it feels very hypothetical. So I feel like really excited, but I also am sort of resigned to say it's really out of our hands. You know, there's not really much to do about it other than stay ready and stay prepared for when the moment comes to go back out on tour. And you'd laugh if you heard the conversations we've had in the last couple of weeks about the possibilities of the next 2 months, you know. It could be this, or it could be this whole other thing, or it could be this thing. It's almost like I'd rather not know. Just wake me up when it's time to go, kind of thing. Yeah. Like I'm just gonna be in my own little world. But it's a test of patience, because I think people assume that the bands have control over some of this stuff. Like,
right.
Just play the show, and it's like, believe me, we would love to play all the shows right now. So we're just trying to stay patient. It's hard when you have a record and you understand that. It's really important to go around city by city and play this new music, because the last album got taken away from us, you know, midway through, like with everybody. So trying to stay up, trying to stay positive.
You're heading here. You're going to be here. And you're heading here at a time where, knock on wood, I feel like summer. I don't even want to say it, right? I'm done jinxing myself. I keep thinking spring, and now I'm like, I'm just going to say summer now. But you're coming here in theory.
We're kind of
outdoor show.
We're kind
of, yeah, we'll be there.
We may see you. We may see you out here. I know, that's how I talk now. I don't want to commit to anything. So I'm like, oh, maybe. And I don't want to be disappointed. You know, like if you, plus you have some big shows. I imagine it's like, okay, we're either playing Madison Square Garden or we're going to sit at home. Like these are your, it's not like, you know, you're just going to dinner. You guys have, these are big productions. I can't imagine your team is of teams of all. And I should mention all the bands out there that are putting on any kind of tour, small to big, to the staff. And that we don't even mention that sometimes. And we should be better about that is on my end, trying to think of all the different people affected by this. But the people who work in the business and touring, the business of touring, the promoters, your own crew, your own roadies, your own sound guys, you like everybody who's involved in that. They also are living, you know, day to day to know if they're going to be making a living. And that this business tends not to have insurance or, you know, paid time off. So I'm sure you have people around you care about and want to be able to make a living at this as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We're member supported just like you. We, like
very similar.
Yeah. Like, but it is interesting. I mean, even like, so with all the venues, I think that's really scary because, you know, you have life on Mars, right? Like there's a lot of independent bars and restaurants and especially music venues for us that you wonder what their fate is if no one can even give them service, you know, go support them in their own way. So it is like a really, it's been a scary last couple of years, and you don't know what it's going to be like, what it's going to look like in the next 2 years going forward. But yeah, the crew we have, we've been able to really keep like intact, and it's been, we're lucky for that. You know, we're seeing the same faces, and we, you know, we describe it as a, you know, you're sort of a dysfunctional family, but you're still like a, you still are a family, and you still, a lot of the people on our crew, we feel like are, they're like the best out there, and they're deciding to be here with us. You know, they can be, they can kind of go work for whoever they want to work for, and you try to make it an environment and recognize and appreciate them so that they want to come and work with us and not just like, ah, I'm going to work. You know what I mean? And I think that takes a lot. That just takes a lot of intention. I think we're all just trying really hard, especially they, we see it in each other in these inconvenient times when it's like, oh, that's like, this is tough, man. And you just try to, you try to do that throughout, but yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think, you know, you being based in Seattle, there's so many local businesses that define a city,
mm-hmm.
your station included, that don't, people just think they're just going to exist no matter what. It's not like they think about it like, oh, I gotta go buy a burger from that place every week or else they're going to go under. Like, but that's really how it, what it boils down to sometimes. So I think in addition to all that, we're trying to get back out there to have everybody in our community and crew like back to work. Like selfishly, we want to go on stage and play the shows because it's just so fun. But it's fun for them too. We're all kind of getting back in touch with what we're, I think, supposed to be doing.
Well, music and community, if those things haven't proven to be lifesavers in someone's past, how you look at it now, it's impossible for me to see it any other way. We need those things, especially once you take them away, you realize how much you need them. And that collective meditation of seeing a show is, I mean, people are just, I think it's going to save lives once people can get back out there. And if people think that's not true, that's fine. But there are plenty of people out there, live music and just being a part of people for a shared experience. You got nothing else going on in your head. You're not worried about bills or diseases or politics or climate when you're just in a song in a moment. So I hear you, man. I thought I'd be there by now, and I'm frustrated.
So it's like literally connecting with other people, you know, that you might not normally connect with. I heard somebody say the other day, they said, we're kind of looking at each other like vessels for bacteria lately. Like we've been reprogrammed and we have to go back to hugging each other eventually. And because that really feeds us. But I saw something on your feed the other day about a woman going in for a first round of chemo and wanting to hear a certain song. And I was like, you know, in our own little way, we experience people saying things like that, you know, whether it's about a song or come to a show. And, you know, I think that's when you really, you don't realize like beyond a particular band, the power of music until you hear those kind of comments. And, you know, we can't really measure people's stress. And I think music has a way of alleviating and getting people, it calms your soul and it gives you, it's a certain kind of medicine that's really hard to measure, but it's definitely integral. And live music, getting together, like I said, it's some people's church. You know, not everybody goes to a traditional church. You know, this is like a version of that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And does it, I know you've always, you know, cared about your fans and cared about music impacting people. Do you feel like you want to do even more? Are you just wanting to get out there and figure out ways you can impact people more? That's all I want to do. I just feel like through this pandemic, seeing that I've impacted anybody makes me want to just help more. How can I help more? Do you see the band trying to do that more?
I think somewhat. I think a lot of it boils down to like what you feel like, you know, as a musician, you get asked like pretty ridiculous questions for what we actually spend our days doing. You know, like, how do you feel about this war they're fighting, or how do you feel we should solve some global climate crisis? And we sit around playing instruments.
That was my follow-up, you know? Dude. Like, you just ruined my follow-up question.
I mean, we hopefully like bring people in the fold, which we have, that help, you know, tours become more carbon neutral or even positive. But that being said, I think honestly, like the most reassuring thing is sometimes keeping it simple and being like, I'm getting back to what I'm supposed to be doing, which is I just want to like write this music and connect with people over this music live.
Right.
Those two things are really gratifying. But when that's taken away, you start to want that thing that you didn't realize you had the whole time, because you can get, like, you get up early every morning for your show. Like, you can burn out at a certain point. You know what I mean? And on the road repeatedly, you know, you go through jet lag and you seem to never get good at it. Like, no matter what, it's the funniest thing. We're like, did it get you again? And now Jared lives in Italy. I'm sure it's a strange version of it as a way of life now. But like, it is one of those things where I think we toured so much for about 10 years that we began to forget what we, you know, the gift we had, in the sense of like, when it was taken away, holy shit. I love playing live, but you play live so much that all of a sudden you're burned out and you lose perspective. So you gain it back. You hope you hold some of it. You hope you retain some of it, because it is like one of the strangest things I think we could have ever imagined going through, or you could have not imagined going through as a, not only just a country, it's the weirdest thing. The whole world is experiencing this together.
Your experience over in Italy too. I mean, clearly the question is, have you adopted a soccer team over in Italy?
Oh yeah. Yeah, so Juventus is is the one of two soccer teams of Torino. The other one is just called Torino, sort of like the Jets and the Giants or something. There's a really deep, long-seated rivalry between the two.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like I say that confidently talking to you, but like if I was doing an interview in Italy, I think you can literally like turn a lot of people off just by stating the soccer team, or the, I guess in their words, the football team that you like. It's like no joke over there, so...
Yeah.
Are they the Jets?
Is that
or the
where
Giants?
You are? Yeah. So you live? Yeah, exactly. Well, Jets and the Giants. You bring that up, and you'll start.
Well, they're really good. So whoever, I imagine they're probably the Giants, more like the Giants. Yeah.
But if you did, was it your wife's family? Was it just? Is it geographical? Is it both? I mean, this is a big deal. When you adopt a team, this is who you are now.
The first time I ever went to Turin 7-8 years ago, whenever that was, I could just tell, like, yeah, they grew up with that. Like, her brother had, their colors are black and white, and sort of like all, like a black and white scarf in the room, and maybe an old ticket stub from going to the game. And then eventually I got to go to my first game, sold out, like, stadium. Awesome. I don't know how many people, if it's like 50, 60, 70,000 people.
Yeah.
And just culturally, it was interesting too. Everybody just watched the game. Like, not one person got up for a beer or a hot dog. Halftime, chug a beer, get some popcorn or whatever, you know, slice of pizza, whatever they get. And then, but I went with my father-in-law and my brother-in-law, I think, the first time ever. And it just was so culturally, like, insanely cool to not be watching music and get it out of, like, the musician, you know, world that we live in, that we lived in constantly pre-pandemic. And just was something really cool to, like, sink my teeth in. Again, that wasn't, I tend to just used to involve myself so much in music, which serves its purpose, but you need to get into other stuff that's sooner or later in your life. So yeah, like I have these grand notions of buying season tickets at some point, and whenever that would be, a year, we'd be home, not in pandemic situation. But yeah, it's really cool just to kind of culturally, you know, get hit by that and to enjoy that over there.
Yeah, I brought an Italian DJ friend of mine to a Sounders match out here in Seattle. And he couldn't believe it. There are that many people there, because we usually have 40, 50,000 people here.
Whoa.
Which is pretty big in America.
Yeah.
And yeah,
it's getting bigger. Big soccer, it's getting city. Bigger in the States, I think, really slowly but surely, which I think is really great, actually, because I think it's an amazing sport.
It is. And my kids, like, we're season ticket holders out here. And then when they see an away match on TV, there's no commercials. They just see action all the way through. You see why America, or corporate America, shies away from it. I was trying to explain it to them. Like, you know, they can't break every 5 goddamn minutes to play a commercial. And I love it for my kids. Yeah. But my Italian friend, too, is just like, why is everybody getting up? He was very confused. Like, the matches that you're going to miss. So I'm glad you said that. Because I was like, is that what goes on over there? Because I've never seen a match outside of the U.S. I can't wait to get over there and experience that.
You know, it's just... It's the most popular sport by far for the whole world. So it's just America that we have our own sports, and that's great too. And that's beautiful. But, I mean, me and Wes, we got to go to a couple games on off days years ago in places like, I think we went to a game in either Liverpool or Manchester. And I guess what I'm getting at is just Europe in general. Going to any soccer game, you get to go over there. It doesn't matter if it's even an important game or not. Just seeing like hooligans and the way they have these like – they'll have a dude with his shirt off and like sub-freezing temperatures. Like he won't even be watching the game. He's just standing with like no support, like controlling like tens of thousands of like maniacs like to do this specific cheer. And it's great. I don't know.
Well, it's a similar thing. I mean, this is tied into music. To play in front of that many people and not be nervous or not have you know they're cheering for you is different, you know, than imagine doing a live show where it was an away show and it's only people who aren't fans of you. like their entire show. Yeah. That's how they have to deal with an away, man. I was trying to tell my kid how why that's a big deal. Like you have to travel somewhere and they hate you. So imagine like, well, for the Lumineers show, we're going to go to like, and I don't want to insult any other band. So like the opposite of whoever you are.
Sure.
And they're all going to just boo you for your entire show. Go.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was like some early days of busking. So
same thing. Wes, are you ever going to go back and, you know, go down there and like do a, you should talk to Jimmy Fallon, do like a busking thing with
the subway.
Get back
to
your roots. Yeah, you should get down there.
Yeah, we'll do it again sometime.
Well, you guys, I hope I see you this summer. I mean, I'll be there. I just hope everything touring wise happens and you're able to get out of here. The new record is just, it's great. It might be my favorite record you've done as well. And I just really congratulate you and they're just beautiful songs. So I'm not surprised at all, but I hope the tour goes well once it gets going again and all the promo.
We need you to speak with more confidence. This tour is going to be great.
The tour is happening. It is happening. We have, you know, we started talking about sessions, you know, we're doing an at-home session. The good news about this latest variant is that we can do a few of these and then get back to having bands in. And we, you know, we're looking at March, but again, people ask us like we have control over it. And we're like, we're here. We're going to be safe. We're doing our best, but we have zero control. So we have the same attitude y'all have. You just do your best. And
we want to come, we want to play that new place. Finally, I think the session we did a while back on our first record was like the awesome old space, but now you have this like state of the art. I don't think we've ever played it.
Now you just guest DJ'd. You hung out.
Yeah, we got it.
Yeah, we
It'd
hung
be
out.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to play it. So just book it. It's booked. It's live.
when we're
booking it. Yeah. You have to get up early though. You got to come on to my show. We got to hang out and
can't be the day of a show or else the night's going to sound terrible. We'll do it on the day off.
Hey, this is on you. You got to spend more time. This is one of your homes away from homes. I know that.
Yeah,
so
right.
You have to come out here and spend some time. And if there's a Sounders match, it's on me. You guys can come and.
That sounds great.
Thank you for spending time today. I know you're very busy and it's always good to catch up with you guys. And man, I only wish the best for you and your families.
Thanks so much, John. Great seeing you, man.
Thanks, John.